Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Homeless Season Podcast. Today we're joined with Phil as usual. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Ron. How's it going?
Good. And with Florian. How's it going, Florian?
Hi. Good.
Good. Before we get kicked off, this episode is sponsored by Homeless Season Cloud by Nabucasa. Easily access your local Homeless Season instance remotely for a small monthly fee that supports Homeless Season and the ESP Home projects. Configuration is done by the user interface, so there's no fiddling with router settings, SSL certificates, or any YAML. All right, let's jump into it. Florian, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're here.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me. I can start with how I got to Home Assistant. It's a bit of a story. I started in my career in infra, with networking and stuff like that. And before that, I was building a lot of computers myself, really interesting in gaming and building my own gaming PCs. About in 2012, I think I switched careers, because I started in infra and then thought, this is not something I would want to do my whole life. And I was fortunate enough that I got a colleague who was in development, and he said, I'll teach you everything you need to know. And around that time, I think there was a board called ZBerry or something like that. Maybe it still exists, but it was a add-on board for a Raspberry Pi. And so I started working with Raspberry Pis in that time a bit as a hobby. And that was even pre-Home Assistant times. Because I was learning development, I also tried to develop with a super simple script, a Z-Wave command to turn on a light. And it was, wow, I can turn on lights. So that was really great.
Or it's like a little kid moment when you first you press the button on your keyboard and it does something. You're like, I didn't have to use a light switch to do that. And I can do it again. And that's really fast. And it's like Christmas, right? Like, yes, thank you.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That is, and back in that time, I don't think there were quite that many, smart home hubs. It was a bit of a starting time for a smart home. And then I remember Home Assistant eventually came out, and I thought, how can I connect devices to that? And I know opening the app, and it was like, it's only, I think in the beginning, it was only for some Z-Wave, Zigbee devices and internet connected devices, but I hadn't had any of those. So I put it away and never thought about it for a few years. Eventually, I backed a hardware device with a remote, but I can't remember the name, on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. It was one of a few first hubs that combined basically Bluetooth and all the radios together in one device.
Yep.
But that eventually got bought up after just 1 year, and they tossed the device. So that was really,
lovely.
Unfortunate.
Yeah. Did you get the device at least, like from the Kickstarter?
Yeah, I got it, but yeah, they were all kind of promises, but after a year it was gone.
Yeah. Did they brick it, or is it just pretty much useless at that point? Still,
yeah, it was useless. No more updates, and they promised like a library of 40,000 supported devices and stuff like that.
But they had like 15 instead.
Indeed. There were quite few, so that was really unfortunate. But luckily, around that time, a device called Homey became available on the market. I think now Homey Pro is a bit known in the world.
Yep.
I think I tracked that quite some time, Homey, but it was really expensive in the beginning, like €500, I think, if I remember correctly.
Right.
Eventually, I got my own apartment, and I just thought, I'll have to buy this to combine all the things in smart home. Started out with Philips Hue, that was basically the beginning of smart home for me. And then in 2017, I met my girlfriend, and she also had Philips Hue in her apartment.
Match made in heaven. There you go. Wow.
Yeah. But she had only the simple things like toilet lights go on, right, and basement lights go on motion. And in 2019 we moved in together, and then my Homey that I bought came really slow because they were based on a Raspberry Pi,
right,
I think 3 or something like that, and it was using quite a lot of RAM, also because in that time I used MQTT to stream all my devices to Home Assistant.
Nice.
Because I was not using Home Assistant, because I thought in that time still that Home Assistant took a lot of effort to maintain. Because I've used Raspberry Pis in the past for all kinds of stuff, and they always kept crashing. And then it took me a weekend to repair everything, and I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So I thought Homey is like a product. They have to maintain it. They have to ensure it's stable. So I'll go that route. But eventually I got so many devices that Homey couldn't process them anymore.
Right.
I thought either I'll buy the new Homey Pro or I switch to Home Assistant. So I decided to switch.
That's interesting. I wonder, like, do you think like you'd have eventually had to come back to Home Assistant anyway with the number of devices you have today? Like, I'm just thinking like on reflection, because I wonder if Homey Pro, like, you'd be in a similar situation where you don't have, well, you've got too many devices for even the Pro to handle.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. The thing was that got me over the edge with Home Assistant is Homey Pro, if you deconstruct it, has just a Raspberry Pi 4 compute module in it.
Right.
Yeah. So I thought the Homey Pro is pretty expensive. Right. And it's just run by a Raspberry Pi inside. So why not use my own Raspberry Pi, which is much cheaper, and I can upgrade at any time without any restrictions.
Yeah.
And just go the Home Assistant route. It just made more sense to me using that. Yeah. So now I'm using Home Assistant for basically everything. And about 2 years ago, we started building our own home. So our own house that we're living in right now.
Yep.
And yeah, we focused really on getting everything prepared up front for smart homes. So a bit deeper wall sockets for potential like monitoring behind the socket or stuff like that. For the network, I decided to go the Ubiquiti route. So all, those,
the access points, Wi-Fi access points.
So, also prepared that. And, I also really wanted, because I saw that on the Home Assistant forum quite a lot, a dashboard in the living room. So, I installed I let them install a wall socket next to the thermostat. And I have now an iPad Air there with an really clean iPad wall mount. It's from Displin, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really clean. It's flush against the wall. You don't even see that that the iPad is almost floating against the wall. So that's really nice.
Yeah.
How do you find using an iPad for the dashboard? Like, I'm using some Fire tablets, so I know there's a world apart in terms of performance, but how do you find an iPad? Like, I think I've even seen some people saying, you know, an older version of an iPad can be a bit slow running, you know, just a browser, but have you found your experience with an iPad?
Really good. There's a little bit of a hack that you have to do, just because on Android, I think you have something like kiosk mode, and you then can use the camera for like activating the screen.
Right.
On iPad, that's a bit more restricted. You can't do that out of the box. But I found a hack for that, and that is if you add a Home or a Philips Hue a motion sensor into HomeKit, and then you put your iPad into single app mode. Yeah. I don't know what that mode is called again, but and then if you kiosk mode indeed. And if you then program in HomeKit that if motion is detected, a notification is sent to the iPad, then the screen wakes up, but you don't see the notification.
Right.
So that way, with that hack, and that's actually also the only HomeKit device that I have, that one motion sensor. It's purely for triggering and turning on the screen of that iPad.
That's cool. Yeah.
That's a really cool hack. But a useful hack. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, it's nice because you don't have to like jailbreak it, or you don't have to like do any of that kind of crap. It's just straight. It's a quick. I mean, it is a hack, but it's still efficient, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope they never remove the capability.
You can never update that firmware on the iPad.
No, never.
I wonder, would Apple shortcuts not let you do, I think that's what it's called, their automation engine, whatever it is. Would they not let you... Would they not let you say, like, if motion detected, turn on screen? I wonder if you could.
I think they more focus on controlling apps and their actions. Apple is always very limited in device capabilities over shortcuts.
Interesting.
So that's working pretty well. Yeah.
That's cool.
So what is the, I mean, you've built your house, which you're living in now. I guess how did the design process go? Like, I know you mentioned, you know, you wanted deeper wall sockets and all that. Was there like an upfront, like, did you find it was more expensive to put those requests in, or were there any pushback from, you know, when you were designing it saying, oh no, it's a bit hard to do it this way, or why do you need to do that?
No, I think the building company was pretty straightforward. It was a project, so it was not a single house. So we were a bit limited in the things we could do.
Yep.
And there were some options that you could just check off.
Right.
For example, making the wall sockets a bit deeper for room for smart devices and stuff like that. You just had to ask and pay the price, but,
Okay. That's good.
So yeah, no real pushbacks. I think I can't remember. No.
Did you when you built the house? Did you get them to wire in anything too?
Yeah, I really thought about KNX and stuff like that, because when I started with Smart Home, it was with Philips Hue, so Zigbee was the main thing I was using. But with new houses, there's quite a lot of isolation in the windows and also between right. floors. So I was really a bit scared about the connection for Zigbee. So I thought about that, but eventually I didn't do it. Just because I thought, there are so many repeaters on the market. If the connection would be bad, I'll just put repeaters somewhere and, maybe I can hide them. The only thing I regret is, more wall sockets, in places at the windows for automating like curtains and stuff like that.
Right.
Because those are battery powered, is a bit hard to do.
Yeah. Whereas this is just always there. It's always plugged in.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Well, we bought our curtains. They said, do you have a wall socket nearby? Because I asked about automations. And as soon as I said, no wall socket, sorry, can you do battery? They said, battery is too
fair enough.
So, there are a lot of retrofit battery devices though.
Yeah, we have some towards our backyard. We have some light curtains, and I used actually a switchbot that you just mount to the rail and just pushes the curtain forward. Works actually quite good, but every 6 months I have to charge that one up. So
I have the same thing with my, like right next to me where you see the light coming from. That's my front yard, which is, I have switchbot tilts there, which same thing, right? But it's for Venetian blind style, but
I really want those as well, but we have black blinds and
they're white.
I think they're white, so not white approved there. So,
I get that. I wonder if you can get this, put like a, because there's not like a big thing. If you get like a vinyl wrap or something like that for like a vinyl sticker. I've seen people do that for access points and stuff like that, right? Where they basically just wrap it in a sticker, just like you would your car.
I have a 3D printer, so I was thinking about buying just one and then maybe designing a wrapper case or
something that clicks around it or something. But that just makes it fatter then. That's the problem.
And it will take some time, so I'd rather just buy it when it's in the right color.
Fair enough.
So you decided to go the Zigbee route in your new home. Is that the only protocol you've got? Have you, because I think you started off with Z-Wave, like in the beginning.
Yeah, in the beginning it was Z-Wave and then a combination of Z-Wave and Zigbee. I tried out some of the Fibaro wall plugs that were also measuring like electricity and stuff like that.
Yep.
Fibaro, it's like a little remote that they have, with, I think 5 buttons on it. And there's also,
cool. It looks like a keyless entry to your car.
I really like that one just to control, scenes and stuff like that. I haven't found one for Zigbee actually, that is that small.
There is the so that's the Philips Hue dimmer switch, but that you can link up to a globe. I think in home assistant you can actually capture the events.
You can.
That would be the closest I get. Otherwise, IKEA have for their trad-free smart blinds, they've got the little knobs that you can, like, they're dial, look like volume knobs. Actually, no, that's for the smart speaker, so it is actually a volume knob. But they are just Zigbee, so you can pair them with Home Assistant as well. I think trad-free like globes have got a simple on-off button. No, there's no like little five scene controlled or anything physically. Yeah. It's strange, right?
Yeah, it's really strange. It's such a nice product. Yeah, and so eventually when we built this house, I decided to just use one protocol for almost everything. Of course, I have some devices like internet connected, stuff like that. Like currently I have ESP Home devices and also an Atatma Home Coach for like CO2 values and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but for the rest, everything Zigbee. I just checked before the show. It's currently 119 Zigbee devices. So.
119. Wow. You're yeah. Can we, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I have some questions. May I ask some questions, please?
I knew Phil was going to interject there. That's perfect.
119. Okay.
Yeah.
So I checked because I know we were just talking a bit before we started recording, and I was like, I've got 70. And I don't know if like recently it's been stable, but I still like, I just checked before, there's still random battery Zigbee devices of mine that just, I know they've got battery left, but they just disappear. Mm. They're unavailable. And then a couple of months later, they'll come back online without me touching them. How have you, what's your hardware for Zigbee? Are you using ZHA or are you using Zigbee to MQTT? Like what's your stack for Zigbee?
So I'm using Zigbee to MQTT with Sonoff stick, so Sonoff Zigbee 3.0 stick.
Yep.
And yeah, there's a bit of a story with that. So I've used Zigbee to MQTT, I think, for after we built the house for half in a year, 1 year straight without any issues.
Yep.
And then I decided one day to upgrade Zigbee to MQTT to the latest version. And then everything kept disappearing from the network and stuff like that.
Don't you love horrible. That when that happens?
Yeah. Acceptance factor of my partner went straight in the bin. So, yeah.
Yep. Yep.
It's yeah, and then
do you have to walk around 100 times and relink everything back to the Zigbee stick?
Yeah, I had the same issue that you had, or the same behavior. So sometimes they just kept coming back, and then I enabled pairing in Zigbee to MQTT, and then it just rejoined the network.
Nice.
It was really, really strange, and I thought maybe my dongle is broken or something. Replace that. I have some Tuya wall plugs, maybe those are interfering with something. I read something on the internet about that. Wasn't the case. And eventually, I think I just downgraded all the way back to a really early version of Zigbee to MQTT and just left it there. Eventually, I repaired all devices, and after that, it was stable again. So I'm not upgrading to anything anymore.
Interesting.
With regards to that, so yeah,
if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, right? it's really the change log. You have to read it. I experienced that. Yeah. If it isn't anything that you really really want to use, don't upgrade. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
So you've got 100 Zigbee devices. I'm guessing they are, because you've replaced Z-Wave and all that now, so it's purely just Zigbee. So are they doing like all your smart lights? I'm guessing like, so they're doing energy monitoring, like they're sending power usage back. I'm guessing your Zigbee network must be like noisy.
Yeah, really noisy. For when we built this house, we decided to go pure Philips Hue. So every light in my home is a Philips Hue light. We also decided, because we were just 2 years checking Black Friday deals and stuff like that, because Philips Hue can be pretty expensive, but if you just track the deals, it's pretty okay. So we also decided to buy those Friends of You switches and their eOcean switches. So when you press them, they just generate enough power to send signal. So we have them everywhere, and I just switched the power to always be connected. So I replaced also the actual wall switch with them.
Yeah, nice.
And yeah, for wall sockets, indeed, I have quite a few of some cheap Tuya wall sockets. They're also measuring power, and I use that for also turning off at night devices that can use a lot of power. I think a recent guest of you mentioned Sonos. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's if you plug in those things and you measure the power, you see at night where nobody is using it, spikes of like 400 watts.
Wow. That's
crazy.
So I started putting smart plugs on my Sonos speakers. I think reading around, there's just that phantom power, right? Makes sense. And so with you've got your 100 devices on Zigbee with power, like how do you find performance of Zigbee with having so many devices on the network? Like if you hit a button to turn a light off in home, do you find like there's a delay or anything like that, or is it still snappy?
It's pretty snappy, I must say. With those an Ocean devices, it's always a bit tricky because you have to hit the button right to activate the power. But sometimes I have to press one or two times. But it's so rarely that it is acceptable. In most places, I have also motion sensors that just trigger lights. I checked just a few minutes ago. The last time I pressed any of those N Oceans was like 3 weeks ago, 1 week ago.
That's cool. That's great.
Yeah. So there are not many times that I actually have to press that button.
And also neat. Great that you can pull up those stats and say, you know, when did I last push this button? Right. That's a really good indicator.
Zigbee to MQTT is really nice in that way. If you enable in settings, you have like a last seen setting.
Yep.
And I also use that to track like if I have any devices that became unavailable or not reacting correctly. And I think Everything Smart Home on YouTube, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe it was someone else, but they just recently had a series about how to get Zigbee to MQTT like really stable and up and running. And they also showed a sensor that you can put into Home Assistant where you get notified every week with all your devices that are unavailable. So that's really nice to like maintain your network.
I can't say I've seen that video series, but I installed a custom Hacks that I found component called Watchtower or Watchman. I can't remember the exact name. But similar thing, right? Like it goes through all your automations, and if you've got a missing entity, it will build a report, and then you can get that to send to you once a week or whatever. But sounds pretty similar.
It's exactly the same indeed. And I have that add-on as well.
Yeah.
It's really great to just maintain everything.
I just activated it before our call today, and I can see like it's found 60-odd entities that must be old entities. I'm like, I have to go and replace those now.
Yeah.
But, you know, like old phone battery states that are somewhere and... You know, like just
and sometimes you rename a device. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
And then you forget.
Yep. All that, right? Yep. So so what are you then driving Home Assistant with? So are you running you're still using a Raspberry Pi 4? Have you upgraded?
Yeah. Yeah, Raspberry Pi 4 with 4 gigabytes of RAM. Recently, I had my SD card die. So luckily I installed, it's an add-on that creates a backup and then uploads it to Google Cloud. So,
nice.
That saved my life. because Home Assistant just crashed out of nowhere and kept rebooting and stuff like that. So I had no idea what was going on. And eventually, it was. I know everything. Everyone keeps saying, don't use an SD card, don't use an SD card. But
It
happened. Here we are.
yeah. here we are. Yeah. So I switched to an SD or SSD, and now everything is fine. And I could just restore from a backup from yesterday. So
yeah,
no problem.
Yeah, no, yeah, no history loss or anything. That's good. And so ZipRecruiter MQTT is also on that Pi, like.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. I had I have it installed as an add-on. Previously, I had the MQTT broker running on a separate device. But when I had the issues with the network, I decided maybe it's a good idea to put it also on the Raspberry Pi, just to keep it close. Previously, I had it running in Docker somewhere on a server in the house, but now it's running on the Raspberry Pi, and it's not using almost any resources. So I just
That's nice.
As usual, we love to find out what are your like top couple of favorite automations around the house.
Yeah. So I have a Tesla, and I have solar panels, but in the Netherlands, it's basically that you still get quite a lot of money if you return that solar power to the grid. So it's not really feasible in the Netherlands to use that power. Just return it to the grid and you'll get your money. But I have a dynamic contract, which means every hour my prices change the energy. So I created a automation also using EVCC. I think a few guests back was also mentioned. It can manage your charge point that you have at home, your private charger, and it can detect which car is connected, and then control basically charging. So I used that for smart charging, and then I have an automation. I use mainly Node-RED for automations because I find the visual thing a bit easier to do than the YAML.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then I just connected it up. So that's one of the automations that I like the most, charging on the cheapest hour of the day when the car is plugged in. I must say I don't use it that much anymore because I recently changed jobs and I'm now actually working on an app that does smart charging.
Cool. So,
I for debugging reasons and stuff like that, it's much more convenient to use the app
that makes
than
sense.
My own. And it's also a bit more complex and can do more stuff. But with that in mind, I also have the dishwasher connected to the cheapest hours of the day. So I added like a small Zigbee button next to my dishwasher.
Yep.
And when the dishwasher is full, you can just press that button. It just schedules it, and Home Assistant just keeps tracking. When the cheapest hours come around, then and the schedule is on, then it just starts the dishwasher,
And how does it start the dishwasher? Like, just resume, like, put power back onto the dishwasher, or is it a smart dishwasher?
Yeah, it's a Home Connect device from Siemens, I think they have like a security levels in their API, so dishwashers can be started automatically without using any buttons. Just they can turn it on and start a program. With dryers and stuff like that is a bit more complicated because I think they are in a higher security level or something like that. So you have to actually press a button to allow remote starts.
Every time.
I didn't bother. Every time. Uh-huh. Yeah. Basically, it resets once the door opens and closes. So, I think it's for if somebody, maybe a pet or something, gets in the dryer. Yeah. But yeah, so you can start that remotely. Yeah.
So it's a good way to fluff up your cat, I guess, or something.
Yeah.
That's interesting, though.
Indeed. Wow. Yeah. So, yeah, dishwasher also in cheapest hours. Last year we finished our garden. So, they always say develop best developers are the lazy developers. So I'm pretty lazy.
Yeah.
So if something can be automated, without me going outside and doing the actual work, I'll automate that. So watering for the garden is completely automated, based on, rainfall and in the last couple of days. Stuff like that.
So as someone that is very much looking forward, like I'm starting to look at that for my next project. What's your setup for outdoors and your irrigation?
So I went with Gardena for that because in my mind it was pretty good availability around in local stores and stuff like that.
Yep.
And it was also pretty straightforward. They have a good app, good integration with Home Assistant.
I think it's in Hacks, isn't it? Like that, if there's a customer owner.
Indeed. And it's also not that expensive. I think I spent around $500 for my whole garden watering system.
That's great. Yeah.
And also for clips and stuff like that. If something breaks, there's a because it's readily available. There's also a great community for 3D prints. So
That's good to know.
Yeah.
And. Are you managing, so you mentioned that it's got, you know, like water levels, rain levels and all that, so you know like when to, you can do some smarts around it. Is Home Assistant doing that logic or is that via the Gardena system that's doing that logic?
No, basically I just control powering it on through the Gardena API.
Yep.
Home Assistant is doing all the logic for censoring the data and stuff like that.
That's
so,
perfect.
I also have a lawnmower, automatic lawnmower, but that is Gardena uses a Bluetooth protocol for the cheaper models.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that is not available yet in Home Assistant. So that is still something I really want to add. Maybe I'll
So you went
myself.
The Gardena robot lawnmower then?
Yeah. Also good.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So. Can't integrate it with Home Assistant yet. Maybe. I mean, Home Assistant does have a Bluetooth integration now. Maybe someone smart out there will be able to get into it. Just in general, how do you find the Gardena robot lawnmower?
It's pretty good. I must say you can just set up. It's also not too fancy. You still have to put like the detection lines or detection cables in the ground.
Yep.
And so it's not using any fancy GPS or cameras or stuff like that. You can just program a schedule and you can tell the mower how far it goes over the line. So you can control that. And I think that's it. It doesn't have any detection for rain or stuff like that. Because it is waterproof, also from the bottom. So, you can just clean it with a hose.
Right.
So, it's pretty basic, but, I think, if you spend a bit more money, you can buy an API connected one today, but
And one without cables and stuff, right? Because I know initially that's how all the robot, lawnmowers had the cable, like the proximity cables, like whatever you call it. That's cool.
I think Ecovax, they've got a robot lawnmower that uses GPS and cameras and all that.
Yeah,
now,
there's a lot out there that do.
We looked at one because we have also just a small patch of grass in the garden at the front of our house. And I was thinking about one with a camera, so where I could just leave the porch open, and then it would drive to that area. But that was really tricky, so I eventually just went with the simple route of just doing the manual job on front.
I don't know. My Roborock sometimes loses its position on a map. And so I wouldn't trust a robot lawnmower going over to the neighbor's house, like getting confused and getting lost in a neighbor's garden, right?
That's funny.
Yeah.
The problem with these huge tech companies is they don't just want your money, they want to know everything about you. Shadowy data brokers make a living compiling detailed profiles of your online activity and selling them to your marketers and other corporate interests that want to control you with targeted ads. They're not selling a product, they're selling you. But you don't have to let them. There is a way to keep your browsing history truly private, and I use it every day. It's an app called ExpressVPN. One of the easiest ways for data brokers to track your digital footprint is with your IP. IP addresses can reveal who your service provider is and even your general location. With ExpressVPN, your IP address is hidden. It is so much more difficult for data brokers to monitor, track, and monetize your usage habits. ExpressVPN encrypts 100% of your network traffic to keep your data safe and private when you're on public Wi-Fi. And it works on all of your devices, phones, tablets, laptops, you name it. Just enable ExpressVPN and you're protected. I use ExpressVPN every day on my network, from securing my internet traffic to testing websites to ensure their localization is working as expected. For me, the fact that ExpressVPN doesn't log my usage and has a wide support for my devices, even Docker containers, means I know ExpressVPN isn't going to be another source for the next data breach. Protect your online privacy today by visiting expressvpn.com/homeassistant. That's expressvpn.com/homeassistant, and you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/homeassistant. All right, so yeah, you've got your irrigation, your lawn mowing done. Any other household chores you've been able to automate with Home Assistant?
Just some things that help with basic things that happen during the day. So for example, a couple of months or years ago, Home Assistant added a pretty good integration for like your Apple Watch, mm-hmm. and starting automation from there. So I have like every morning when I have to drive to work, I have an automation that I'm leaving to work, and it basically unlocks our door, because we also have like an automatic door lock, and nice. Then starts also preheating the car. So stuff like that. Also, like a bedtime automation. So when the last person goes to bed, everything turns off in the house. Also, devices that use quite a lot of power, the door locks, and you get only the lights that lead you to the bathroom, basically. Yeah.
As someone that doesn't have an iPhone or an Apple Watch, I'm trying mm-hmm. to get the terminology here right. So you've got, I think they're called complications on the watch interface. So that's how you can mm-hmm. trigger these things in Home Assistant. Can you customize at what time of day those complications show on the watch, so that, you know, your morning routine only shows on the watch in the morning and your nighttime routine is only there at nighttime?
I'm not sure. I from what I'm using right now, it's like you have like a complication, and if you press it, you get a list of scenes nice. Basically you can activate. And okay. I know that you can like cut that list down to exactly what you want to show on the watch. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you can switch that up based on the time right. of the day.
Yeah.
Okay. But maybe you can. I haven't looked that closely at it.
Yeah.
But that would be really cool, because indeed, I only use preheating the car in the morning and bedtime in the evening. So yeah, indeed. Yeah. And then maybe some other things. I'm working also sometimes at home. So I have set up like a home office. I found a couple of months ago an add-on on Hex, circadian light it's called. And it basically tracks the sun and changes the lights based on that. It's really great.
Yeah.
So easy setup.
You've got Philips Hue everywhere, so that's going to be perfect for you, because you get the daylight, you know, bright blue lights in the day, or the of fluorescent white lights in the day. And then at sunset, I used to have Zigbee downlights that had, you know, the cool white and warm light. And that was one of my favorite things too, right? Just as the sun's setting, like to go like that shift, right, during the day. And then, that was one of my favorite things. Don't have it anymore.
Really,
but, I'm jealous.
Yeah, that's really great. Also, in the evening when the lights are a bit more orange, it helps you to also to sleep faster.
So like
good.
That's cool.
And then I also set up like a power sensor behind my basically my monitors and my PC, so that when they are not using any power, the lights automatically turn off.
Cool. So you know if you're in the room or you're not in the room, kind of, or if you're using the computer.
Yeah. And just recently, I also I bought on Amazon like a car pressure sensor, like a seat sensor. And I put that underneath my my chair, so it also tracks when I'm actually sitting in the chair.
Yeah.
And if not, my desk is I have a, like a standing desk, sit standing desk. So if that is not up, then it's also turned off.
Okay, that's interesting.
And so I guess that probably isn't a good question around like presence for the rooms. Like, are you tracking, you know, when you walk into a room? Because I know you mentioned you didn't have to use a light switch before. So how are you, you know, automating lights around the house?
It's mostly motion sensors currently. I would love to try some of those millimeter wave sensors in the future. But currently it's motion and power usage of like the TV and stuff like that. So, I do have some more, a bit more complex stuff that that I really like, or complex. So we have two stairs in the house, and I have set up one motion sensor at the top of the stairs and one at the bottom.
Yep.
So with a quick automation, I can check if you're walking up or down, and then it turns on the lights accordingly to where, in what direction you are walking.
That's great.
That's just super easy and brings a lot of value, I think.
Yeah, that's cool. So,
For the rest, I'm trying now to automate my my desk, but there are some projects out there, but it's I'm not good with electricity, so it's a bit of a tricky project for me, because you have to really. They're using like a UART connection. You have to buy an analyzer to read the bits, and then you have to write them with ESP Home. So,
I'm assuming you've Googled like the brand of the desk and all that, and try and see if someone else has already done it.
Yeah. And there are quite a lot of white label desks out there. Yeah. So I have one of those. If you have like a known brand, then it's a bit easier.
Yeah.
Either they have like a module that connects with Home Assistant, or somebody created a project for that. But if you have like a motor from a random Chinese company, then it's really hard to automate it.
So you're trying to automate it. How do you want to automate it if you get there?
Yeah. So currently, I have a door sensor on the foot of the desk, which measures if the desk is up or down.
Yeah.
And every hour I get like a stand notification when I'm sitting at my desk.
Yep.
So like you've been sitting for an hour, please stand up for 30 minutes.
Yep.
But it would be great if I could just automate that, and then the desk would, or I get a notification, for example, and it would ask me, and I would just click it and it would move up, something like that. Or for example, if I then sit down on my chair, which I have a sensor, of course, in that kind of track. If I'm sitting down, then the desk just goes down. So,
As one lazy developer to another, I've got the IKEA Bluetooth sit-stand desk for that reason.
Yeah.
but I've just been too lazy to automate it to do that.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think it's just people sometimes ask me from what does that automation bring as value?
Yeah,
it's not super much. I could actually press the button which is next to me.
Yes.
To let the desk go down, but it's just a fun to automate it, and then
So future looking, what are some of the automations or smart things you want to build into your house?
Yeah, so the desk is really one thing that that I would like to automate, and also the Venetian blinds that we have. We actually don't use them that much. They are just on one setting and the whole day. But it would be really cool, like if the sun goes down, that they automatically close.
Yeah.
I think that would be really nice. And maybe I currently have, I think it's from Xiaomi, plant sensors in my indoor plants to measure like what's the water level and the nutritional level. But I would also like to automate something like a water tank that if you go on vacation, that you can just put it next to it and it just drips water That's into cool. it so plants don't die. Yeah. We had them die one vacation, so...
I mean, if it makes you feel any better, mine die when they're here, so when I'm still here, so it's...
but... Yeah, those Xiaomi sensors are really nice. They just show you the level. I put like an automation plant XYZ water level low, and then it just pushes you.
I've tried so many. Like I still have. Like I've got like literally one in the wrapper still, and I've got one that's from a dead plant, mind you, right? And it's like, I think I just don't have the best. Green thumb.
No, me neither. But I think if you can automate it, and then maybe if you can automate it indeed further, that it just feeds the plant automatically.
Then, yeah, that's ideal.
Then you don't have to do anything. Yeah. So that are one of the things. And the government here announced that in 2027. You will not be getting as much money anymore for the power you put back in the grid. So then battery storage becomes interesting. So I now started looking into some battery solutions and how I could integrate those into my my home. Yeah.
I know in Australia that even talking about charging people, like if you're exporting during peak time, like in the middle of the day when the sun's shining, they'll charge you for exporting.
As opposed to paying. Here they started doing that as well. Like if you have, but they base it on how much solar panels you have.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's say you have 13 solar panels, then you pay like €100 a month as a surcharge for.
Exactly.
That's interesting. I know nothing about returning power or anything like that, right? So like, what is the logic there? Because technically, aren't you helping the grid by sending power back? So shouldn't they be encouraging it rather than discouraging? Or is there costs involved for them that when you do that?
Yeah, there's a the grid has to be in balance, and so if there is no power taken from the grid and a lot of power going in the grid, you get an unbalanced system. And that can lead to quite a lot of problems. That's also why dynamic plants exist. In when there is a lot of surplus, then the prices are low. We here in the Netherlands already got like 2 days where it was below zero. So if you use power, then you get actually money back.
Wow.
Wow.
That's really
that's
great.
Interesting.
Yeah, paid to use electricity. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really strange because the sun is shining and they just tell you use everything you got and you even
bring
get money
bring
for
out
that.
The Bitcoin miners. Yeah. That's.
Indeed. Yeah. So I charge up my car if that happens or something like that. I have we have a heating pump in our home. So it has a pretty big boiler. So right. I also automated that to heat it up to like 60 degrees when that happens, just to avoid. Because if you actually return power to the grid at those times, you pay.
Wow.
So it's not only, yeah, so, yeah.
I guess that makes sense. Yeah, that kind of makes sense then because of the balancing. But I feel like they could just like put like some kind of a transfer switch at your, like a smart transfer switch at your house, just to say, hey, we have too much power, and just like basically kill the power coming in, right? Just
kill the export. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I think they are doing that with some systems. Yeah. 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 So what I did also, Yeah.
I think the one down here, they're saying like, that's it. Like all new installations have to have the, like a remote kill like capacity, right? Mm. So that they can shut it off now. If that ever happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Something I did for when we're going on vacation is that when it goes to zero and no one is in the house, I just turn it off the consumption of the solar panels.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Because otherwise, yeah, you would just pay.
Yeah,
that's it.
But the whole storage is very interesting to me, like battery kind of thing, right? I've been interested, but obviously I haven't done anything towards it yet. But
yeah, it's really. I think we all need to move in that direction because there's now, at least in the Netherlands, they pushed for solar panels quite a lot with incentives and stuff like that. So there are so many houses with solar panels, and now you get like an imbalance in how much power you consume at one time and how much is returned. So, and then at night there is like there's a difference in like 20 cents sometimes. Because people start cooking, which draws power. Yeah, taking showers, stuff like that,
that stuff too. Right? Just in general.
Yeah.
And that's when people are home, right? Otherwise, sometimes people are at the office.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever, so interesting.
Yeah. So if you can store that power for later, then
Totally. Yeah.
It just makes the use case for Home Assistant and smart home in general, right? Like so much more compelling. Like when you have. You know, just simple things like imagine all the people that have solar panels that don't have the capacity to automate their homes to this level, right? Like, Home Assistant now becomes, it pays for itself, even though it's free.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's also, I think, if we get so many devices, there's now an app with your car. Probably like a battery has its own app, and then your solar panels also have an app.
Yep.
You don't want all those apps. You just want one app with simple controls. And
exactly.
And I think I don't know. In my head, the cool thing would be like if you have like, let's say you have the batteries, you have smart breakers, things like that. Everything, even if you don't have solar, like I don't have solar at my house, right? It charges with grid power.
Mm-hmm.
But I we also have like slightly. It's not dynamic pricing, but it's like a nighttime price and a daytime price kind of thing, right? Or like time of use, whatever it's called. Yeah. And, you know, great. During the day, or whenever it's more expensive, I start, you know, draining the batteries a little more. And then during the, whenever it's cheap, start using the shore power, right? So you start using whatever's delivered by the utility company there. So I don't know. Or, even to say like, hey, it's obviously it's a cleaner, right? So because it's you're not having the fluctuations and all that stuff, but like a whole home UPS almost, right? And then tied to smart breakers. So if the power from the city does die, then you just flick off a couple of breakers automatically, and it's just now in like essentials, right? So whatever that looks like, I don't know. To me, there's a lot of possibilities you can do. Some of it might not be possible today, just with where the technology is, but it's, I don't know, to me that's kind of, the notion of that's pretty interesting. So
yeah, definitely. I know there are some projects, I think also in America, where they have like a neighborhood battery storage. So the neighborhood just charges up the battery, and then you can just use the battery, and you get like a small market exchanging like power.
We have virtual power plants where, like, if you have a battery on your house, you can sign up with your electricity company and they will manage, you know, when your battery drains out to the grid and all that. And that is really cool.
For the UI, I'm using a minimalist UI. I always try to have a really clean UI for Home Assist, also with the iPad on the wall.
Yes, of course.
That's something I really love. With
the iPad on the wall, like, so you're using that minimalist UI. How do you find, like, are you using, because I'm using mushroom cards and dynamically displaying, you know, like alerts, right? You know, like notification badges. Are you doing something similar? Like, you know, maybe there's new mail detected in the mailbox. You've got a badge for that on the iPad.
No, not at the moment. Mainly when I need notifications, I just push them to my phone. But I've been thinking about it also with if you have like cheap prices for electricity or something like that, or rain is coming or stuff like that. But now currently I just push them to my phone.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I think the notifications I got, like I have the critical ones go to my phone, but then I have, you know, just a quick glance status, right? So you can see, oh, you know, this device is marked as offline, right? Or don't forget to take the bins out tonight,
right?
That sort of stuff.
Yeah, just looks
nice on the dashboard, right?
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Maybe something also that that I forgot to mention is, which is also a really great automation that that combines everything that we now have in our home. We have the Zigbee smoke detectors.
Nice.
So when there is fire, there has never been fire, but in case of fire, all the lights in the house would turn on, the curtains would open, the door would unlock. So that's also something that I think is really cool in case of emergency.
Yeah, of course.
I love those automations where you can just do things like that, right? Like there's an emergency, you're in the middle of the night, just turn the lights on.
But I think that that covers us pretty well.
That's awesome.
Well, I think you have an awesome setup. And thank you for sharing it with us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So yeah, Florian, thank you so much. Speak to you guys soon.
Cheers.
Yeah, thank you. Great talk to you guys.
Take care. Bye. Cheers.
If you want to share your Home Assistant journey or come on as a guest, reach out to us at feedback@hasspodcast.io. That's hasspodcast.io.
The Home Assistant Podcast is hosted by Phil Hawthorne and myself, Rohan Karamandi. For links to topics we discussed today, check out our show notes on haspodcast.io.